really subjective. Like, we shouldn't, you shouldn't think that any of these questions, though, there's only one answer. I certainly don't feel that way, and you should not feel that way. I want to thank each of you for coming to the Schmooze for the past year. It's been awesome. It's been awesome. You know, I don't view myself as such a great speaker and such entertainment. And you didn't know you were going to get a barbecue out of it. Not that I think you would have gone for a year's worth just for a barbecue. But the fact that you came during your lunch for the past year, most of you put pretty consistently, it means a lot to me. So really, thank you very much. And I sent some of them to Ori, which I think he may like. So, you know, he's also a part of the Chevra. He's also a part of the Chevra. Okay. I tried to do as much research on these questions as I could with people who may know better than I would. But the first question I got is, should a person enter a job with demanding hours, such as an investment banker or a lawyer, or just in case you don't, for those of you that don't know, the hours are very, very demanding. Is that going to be bad for your Avodas Hashem? So I asked a bunch of my friends who do that. I happened to have thought before, I'm going to give a disclaimer, before I asked anyone, I thought 100% it was mutter, that there'd be nothing wrong with it, and just you'd have to factor in. So from my conversations, they made it pretty clear that it's not so pashut that it's mutter, and that it's a lot of them view it as a bidyeved. But okay, whatever, you know, you're in it. So I'll just say my thoughts first. Avodas Hashem does not mean going to kol, doesn't mean going to chinuch, doesn't mean learning 11 hours a day. It means doing what works for us, what helps us be able to be closer to Hashem. And for some of us, we are on this world to work, to give back, to give stucca, and that's just our topic. Like, you know, if you're meant to be someone who can work and you take a job that's not really what you want to do, and what really, like, you're like, oh, because I was in yeshiva, you know, I went to this buffoon Mark Merrill, you know, for a barbecue, and he told me, like, if I don't go into chinuch, you know, my life is basically pointless, when really my life was meant to be like working in corporate law. You know, we have to do that which we feel like we're able to give the most to our lives. What my friends told me, which is important to realize, the first point is, and we'll get to a question pertaining to this after, it's very, very important when you're if you take a 9-to-5 job or a 9-to-6 job, like, you know, most women, you know, you're going to get married, Mr. Shem, they're going to understand that you're going to work. They're going to understand that. They're not going to view like 9-to-6 as like, that's so overly demanding. Like, what do they expect? They think you're going to work from 9 to 11 and, you know, be able to like live. Like, they get you're going to have to work. They don't necessarily understand what it means to work like 14-hour days, or the second after Shabbos is over, you're working for 7 hours. You know, they're not necessarily getting that. So it's very, very important that your wife is going to be on board. And if you're pursuing something like this, that she's going to know about it. It's not going to get strung on her. Oh, wait, you're working those kind of hours? I didn't think you were going to do that. It's very, very important that she's going to be on the same page and that you're going to be working together, because investment banking job is sort of like a rabbi of a shul. Like, it's got to be both. Like, you both have to be into it, because it's hard. Like, if your wife doesn't even care that you do it, not that she has to be all in if you're a rebbe, if she's a rebbe, but she doesn't care at all, it's going to be very, very, it's going to be very hard. So if I'm working 15-hour days and my wife is like, no, you have to be home at 5 o'clock to care of the kids, that's not going to work so well. But this person was very pro. He said that, like, he said there are challenges, but he was pretty into it. The other two who I asked, or a few others, but basically what they all said was that the thing to be very careful and why it affects your Avodas Hashem is you have to understand that, like, we still have a purpose on this world and it can't be 100% work. And it overtakes your life. Like, you forget that you have a life. Like, your life is, like, you know, if my phone, you know, like, during Mincha, like, I have to be looking at my phone the whole time. Because if I get a message from, like, my boss or a client and I don't respond 3 seconds later, you know, we're on food stamps. I'm going to lose my job. And it really does overtake your life. So you have to be ready for that kind of lifestyle. And you have to be ready to understand that, you know, it's, you know, Shana Ben Leva Torah, you know, that was like picnic. So, you know, literally, we're out in the, on a 75-degree day outside of Ramat Beit Shemesh enjoying, you know, some hot dogs, burgers, steak, and salami, and salad. I don't know if any of you are having salad, but we do have salad. You know, that's not what that kind of life is going to be, and it is going to overtake your life. And the last advice, which I thought was the best towards how to make it work, is this guy was telling me, you know, you go to yeshiva, you have nights here, you want to have nights here when you're older, and it's not realistic when at any minute I could get an email and I have to tend to something. But he said you have to be willing to adjust. So this guy started going when last January, like 14 months ago, he started doing Daf Yomi and goes to a 5:30 shir in the morning. Because at 5:30 in the morning, for the most part, you know, you're not going to have clients who are going to be, they're sleeping also then. But like understanding that you had to adjust on the fly. You can't just be like, oh, I want to do the, no, oh, I can't learn at night, oh, I can't do this. Like, there's ways that you have to find the opportunity. And he also was, and I know know him pretty well. He was also like mechaven to that, your wife really has to be a partner with you and getting what she's getting into, because, you know, even definitely before Corona, like when people were in offices, it's demanding. It's really, really demanding. So I'd say the maskana is that it's not antithesis to avodas Hashem. You have to make it that it's your avodas Hashem, but finding ways in your life and how there will still be some formulation of growth in addition to your job. All right. The second question that I got, another one that's also super, super subjective, probably the most subjective of all of them. When should I begin to date? Huh. Some people here may even be dating relatives of people here, for all we know. You know, who knows? Who knows? But when should one begin to date? When should one begin to date? You know, the answer really is everyone. Again, you have to know yourself. For every person is different. The Rambam does talk about you should learn Torah first, and then you should get married. It comes up in Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam says, though, if you're so distracted that you wouldn't be able to learn, then you have to get married, and then you go back to learning. So, okay, we're not going to necessarily take into that, but you know, it's when if you can't focus on anything else, and your life is just, I need to get married. We had a guy a couple years ago; he's already married almost a year. Like, he just had that in him. He had to get married. Like, there are people like that. I think 22 is a reasonable age to begin dating. I don't think you have to like be fretting about it before 22. 22 can seem early. I got married at 26, and I didn't start at 22. But I didn't really start at 22. 22 can be, I like yeshayed before 22, but I didn't like actually date before 22. I would say, though, if you, or how old are you? Okay. I would say, if you're 24 and not yet dating, and for other, like, that's important to talk to people about why you're not dating. Like, there could be a lot of valid reasons. It could be commitment, be job, you know, etc. I think it's also important not to talk to, like, I think everything is important to talk to Rebbeim. I think you have to know, like, when you talk to Rebbeim, they come from different lives. Like, if you would talk to, say one of the Rebbeim in yeshiva, let's say it's like 50. So he may say, yeah, you get married and, like, you know, rent is like $400 a month, because that's what it was when he got married. And he'll start saying, you know, you don't need so much. But you're not realizing that in 2021, like, wherever you're living, you know, that's not what rent is. And things are very, very different. So it's important to, like, talk to people who are on the same page. But, and finances would be a valid reason. And again, everyone does need to know that. But I think what can happen often, and I did see it for myself also, is it's not always so bad being older and single. For some it's horrible, and for some it's not really so bad. And we get very used to that life, and that's not great. That's when you need a gut check. For me, like, for me, a big turning point for me is I had two very close friends got married 2 days apart. And at that point, after that second wedding, right before Thanksgiving, I got home that night, and I'm like thinking to myself, it's really time. I started dating my wife three, four months after that. And just understanding that, like, now the breaking point a lot of times is, but, like, when your friends are single and, like, you know, life is enjoyable and, like, the dorm life and everything that's going on is a lot of fun, we're not necessarily running, but, you know, being married and raising a family and having children is important. Also, to when you should begin to date, I should have mentioned this originally, when you begin to date, you have to be ready to have a family. Now, a wise driver might say, like, I'm not getting like pregnant that day. Like, it's not happening. And then, okay, it's a fair point. But, like, you know, when you start, to date not for marriage is also like, it's like platonic friendships, which aren't real. That's not a avodas Hashem. That's not a good idea. That won't end well either, and that's not a good idea. So you have to at least be ready on the trajectory of getting married. Obviously, if you're 19 or 20, you start dating and you have no financial independence and your parents won't fully support you, okay, you're obviously not getting married at 21. I get that. But important to have that in mind. Okay, question number 3. How much time each day should one devote to learning when they get older? Actually, I asked this to Rav Kancher yesterday. We discussed that. So my one of my chavrusas in YU, Eitan Mishkov Shlita, when he was in Shalvim, I've definitely said it before. Yeah. said this before. When he was in Shalavim, which, you know, Shalavim is not exactly Lev HaTorah, but, you know, every yeshiva is great. His Shana of Rebbe got up and asked everybody, how much time do you want to devote to learning when you're older? You know? I did a sort of reconcier yesterday, and the answers were wide. So in the Shalavim, someone's like, 12 hours a day, 9 hours a day, 7 hours a day, 6 hours a day, and I'll work. And my friend, my Chavrusa, said, 1 hour a day. 1 hour a day. And everyone's looking, 1 hour a day? Dude, why are you in Shalavim? Like, you know, like, there's other yeshivas there. You shouldn't be in Shalavim. Like, what are you doing? And at the end of the thing, the Rebbe says, I want you all to know, only one of you had the right answer. And they're all like, oh, yeah, 12 hours a day. Look at me, like, the Rav's Mechamed me. And it's a fellow who said 1 hour a day. He's the only one whose head is screwed on the right way. Because it's not realistic. You can't work 12 hours. Forgetting investment banking. You know, you can't work as a Rebbe and Leva Torah and learn 12 hours a day. You know, it's not realistic. And as life gets on, things become very, very difficult. And, you know, an hour to an hour and a half is a fair and reasonable mahalach. And as you'll see, you know, as Tony and Shanaf guy today, you know, as we mentioned before this, I now know 49 Shanaf guys, so we're getting there. You know, there's a lot I could talk to. And I was telling him, he was asking me yesterday, like, when you said coming Shana Bez, like, really, like, one of the best decisions you made in your life, do you really mean it? And I'm like, you know, times were different. You know, times were different when I went Shana Bez versus today. You know, I can't compare to what Shana Bez is. But, you know, from a perspective of, like, wanting learning to really be a main part of our life, I really think Shana Bez is important. So I told him, like, if you don't want to learn, yeah, you shouldn't come to Shana Bez. Like, that's not, yeah, don't come back if you don't want to learn. It wouldn't make any sense. So assuming that you want learning on some level, I was talking to Ishai about this last week. Like, it's a half hour day, which is also okay. Half hour, the yomi, the learning every day is more important than the amount. But the idea of, like, trying to chat those moments, trying to find available time and to make the most of it and don't feel bad. It's really that. If you learn an hour a day, like, when I was in yeshiva, even when I slept like 13 hours a day, I was learning more than an hour a day. Like, I don't know, am I doing something wrong? But no, an hour a day is definitely something to strive for and something good. Question 4 came from our chaver, Rav Noach, who couldn't join us. I'll preface by him saying this is just a theoretical question. This isn't what he felt, but this was his question. My passion is for Chassidus as opposed to the Gemara. Should I spend time on learning Chassidus and not learning Gemara? Which he then went on to say, no, I'd still rather learn Gemara. Just want to hear what you're going to say on that. Okay. Rav Asher Weiss, Shlita, someone was telling me about this yesterday, that he says on this question, basically the same exact way, he did an interview with Rav Shlomo Katz, and this question came up. You can imagine it coming up. Makes sense. And Rav Asher Weiss said, and this is very, very important for whatever you want to do, you got to learn what your heart desires. So if your heart desires Tanakh, you got to learn Tanakh. If your heart desires Chassidus, you got to learn Chassidus. If your heart desires Gemara, you got to learn Gemara. But he said, with that being said, Gemara is still the Iker Limud, so you have to make sure that you're learning Gemara as well. And all the big Chassidus masters of our day, you know, Rav Moshe Weinberger and the other ones, you know, everyone else, they all learn Gemara and Halacha. That's their Iker Limud. I don't know when they find time. They're really impressive that they always know all these, that they have a million Maisim and that they know all these Chassidus Sfarim. I don't know when they find the time, but that's not their Iker Limud. That's not what they're spending their primary time on. And for me, I can never answer this. Except for, like, if you look at all the yomis, what's the most famous yomi people do?
Daf yomi.
Daf yomi is Gemara. So that may in itself be the raya of that Gemara is the most popular one. Every yomi's been created. Yet for some reason, you know, you don't hear about the. We finished Divrei HaYomim today. Like, you're not hearing people have, and that's a huge accomplishment. One should be very happy about that. But you're not hearing that. It's, oh, the Sea of Ashas had 100,000 people in MetLife. That's what people are talking about. And I can't answer why, but I don't really know anyone who's learning seriously who's not learning Gemara. So, for whatever reason, that's what's taking traction. However, I'll say this, for me, not that Mark Merrill giving you a haskama should mean anything, or you need a Mark Merrill Haskama. If you tell me, you know, Rafi calls me up 8 years from now, it's like, you know, I just want to let you know, I just had my second kid, things are great, I'm buying a house, you know, work is great, like, things are going great, and he lets me know what's going on, I just want to let you know, I learn 45 minutes every day, and I don't learn any Gemara. I learn Shai Mikra, which is the Chiyuv, maybe the only Chiyuv we actually have to do. I learn Chassidus, I learn Tanakh, I learn Machshava. You know, I listen to at least a 10-minute shiur here and there, and I'm learning 45 minutes a day, and I don't open up Gemara. So some people might say, Rafi, well, let you know, you're a disappointment, and start doing Daf Yomi, start doing Gemara. I'll be, like, jumping with joy. Maybe I'll still be living here. I'll be out of this merpeset, jumping with joy, preparing for, I just made a bar mitzvah 8 years from now. Be jumping with joy. I'll think it's incredible. I'll think it's incredible. Others won't say that. I'll think it's incredible. I'll preface by saying, though, or not preface, I'll conclude by saying, I don't think that'll happen. I don't think Rafi is going to come and that's going to happen, that he's going to be learning 45 minutes a day and not learning Gemara. But, again, your heart, I think we have, yeah, Gemara is the ikker, but I think we have to do what our heart desires. And if your heart desires something else, like, don't do something that's really, really unenjoyable for you. I'll just say for myself, I may have said this, but I definitely said this, but when about a year before I finished, made my Siyum of Shas, I was trying to receive. I had 2 Masechtas left. I had like 100 daf left in Shas. And I told receive, you know, I'm not so into Gemara. Like, not so into Gemara? You've done 2,600 daf, you're not so into Gemara? And he was shocked. And he wasn't shocked that, like, oh, you're not into Gemara. Like, you know, he teaches the Leva Torah, even the top shir in Leva Torah. Like, I think receive can know from a world of guys not being into Gemara. But he was shocked that I'd been doing it 2,600 daf and not being so into it. And to me, like, and I've got actually now my second time through, I'm getting more into it. But what kept me going was just realizing that anytime I try not to do it and do other stuff, it just doesn't go. You know, you can only have a Mishnah Berurah limud for so long. Okay, you can learn halacha seriously, but that's like also like the same idea. Like, you can't learn Machshava, you can't just learn Tanakh like all day and be like, that's satisfying. Like, it's hard to listen to, like, as a supplication, you can listen to Shiurim. It's very, very difficult when that's all you're doing. So you have to learn with the heart. Again, like all the questions, subjective. You gotta learn. But even like Yishai, like, I don't know. I'm gonna start talking. I'm gonna start mocking. Like, every time he's like, let me start learning. Like, it's always going back to Gemara. I've never heard him say, like, you know, I'm about to open up Shmuel Aleph. Like, that's where it's at. Like, he's not feeling Shmuel Aleph. So maybe he's just, you know, maybe he's with NCSY Cole. He's got the yeshivish, army, Sioni in him. Who knows? Who knows what he's got in him? But for whatever reason, you know, he's always coming back to Gemara. Like, Mordechai finishing Sukkah. Like, there's a reason. There's a reason this is what's pushing us. But do what your heart desires. I'm okay with that. Again, not that you need me being okay with that. If you're learning every day, I think that is excellent. I just think, also, like, another thing, the great thing of Daf Yomi is, it's really the consistency. And it's like the consistency, like, that a world is doing it. Like, you know, the world is doing Pesachim Daf Kuf Ches today. Like, that's like, a, you know, when you're, I remember when I finished Erevin a couple years ago, I made a Siyum for, the year before you guys were here. And I remember saying, like, you know, when you're learning Erevin, like, by yourself, it's so hard. Like, who's learning Erevin? Like, the Rishamis of the world who happen to be up to Erevin. And, like, no one's learning Erevin, and it's very hard to push through. But this time, it was much easier. The whole world is doing Erevin. So when we do, like, Daf Mem Vav of Erevin, and no one understands it, like, okay, we're all doing Daf Mem Vav of Erevin, and we don't understand it. Like, the whole world is in the same boat. But, like, you don't have, like, a boat of people that are like, we're doing Nechemya Perek Dalet today. Like, that's not so going on. Or, like, you know, we have a Chevra who's learning, like, Rav Wolbe today. Like, you don't have it. So it's much harder from, like, just an inner push of, like, knowing that, oh, like, Rasitran, I think when he made his CM last year, I don't know if you guys were there, when he made his CM and he talked about he was on a train with somebody and he ran into the person and they're talking about the DAF and, like, they had that connection. Otherwise, they'd have nothing to talk about. And there's, you always had that connection. The last question, it's a good question. Not one I should be dealing with, but really I thought a really good question. How to deal with parents that nag me? So I will preface by saying everything I'm going to say is assuming that there's no physical, verbal, or emotional abuse that goes on with you and your parents. If that goes on, that's a totally, totally different sugya. Everything I'm about to say is totally different in those cases. And if that is going on, definitely to speak to somebody. I see it now as being a parent. Parents are, and as the only one here is a parent, parents are so annoying. Like, I am so, like, my wife always says to me, like, you're so annoying to the kids. Like, we're just so annoying, but we love our kids so much. Like, everything we're doing that's annoying is really, really 100% out of love for our children. Like, you really, really love them. Like, you don't, like, get it. Like, when you're, well, like, your parent, like, does, like, they send you a cake or they sponsor, like, a mishmar because of your birthday or because of something. Their mom is doing it because they love you. They're doing it, like, they literally love you so much. Like, this is their way of saying, like, we want you to know that we love you. Like, there's a pretty sad story, but there was a wife passed away and the husband at Shiva, like, breaks down. And someone asked him, like, why are you breaking down? He's like, you know, I almost at a point, like, before my wife passed away, I almost reached a point of telling my wife that I loved her. But, like, I was never able to tell her. Like, not because I didn't love her, because I couldn't get the words out. Like, and I have no idea if my wife really knew that I loved them. Like, parents love their kids, so, like, you don't get it. Like, you really, really don't get it. First of all, you probably get it a little more because now your era gets finances more. But, like, you don't get, like, what the sacrifices are to have children. Or, like, how much of a financial burden, I wouldn't say burden, but, like, we'll call it as it is, a financial burden children are. Like, your parents, like, they literally love you. Like, when like, they don't hear from you for a day, and that even goes more to grandparents. Like, when they don't hear from you for a day, it, like, it really does hurt them. Like, it really, like, when they're going through struggles, like, you're, like, really, you're really affected. Like, you don't realize, like, how much, like, it's affecting your parents, but they really, really, really are, they really are affected. And yeah, some stuff they do are annoying. It's annoying. Like, what can I tell you? You know, I see it from, you kind of have to be in my boat to, like, to get it. Like, you have to be a parent and a child to understand what it means. Like, you see, and I see it, like, a lot of times. I would see it with my parents, like, what would annoy them that their parents did, they would do the same thing. Like, and what my parents would do that would annoy me, I'd do the same thing. And what annoys my kids that I do, they're going to do it. It's like, you know, it's a real, that's why I say, like, unless there's abuse going on, which hopefully that chain reaction won't continue, the chain reaction of being an annoying parent, that just goes on forever, but they do love you. And, like, to really appreciate that and to, I think something that's taken for granted, like, we don't have enough hakaras hatov for what I mean. You know, I asked, I dabble and struggle with people who just have a ton of kids. So that's not such a thing, who can't financially afford it. That's not such a thing in America. Like, you don't have, I don't know if you really know people. Most people don't, you don't hear of families with 8 children in America. That's not so common. In Israel, that's much more common. I was talking to Rashamai, and Rashamai was telling me where he lives, if you have 7 kids, like less than 7 kids, like you're basically considered like you're barren. Like, you're having, like, fertility issues. If you have 6 or 7 kids, like, that's, like, that's, like, not the norm. And he was telling me that he also struggles with this question. And he had a 7th kid. He said after, like, he thought about it, like, a lot, that what would my life have been if I didn't have this child? And how much this child means to me. And that's really true. It's really true. Like, when the people come to collect tzedakah and you're giving them their half a shekel because they have, like, 13 kids and can't afford anything, like, they love every kid unconditionally, and it's the greatest chus in the world for them, you know, to have that. Like, it's unconditional love, and to really be makir tov, because, like, you think about that Rashamai story. Like, I'm the youngest, and there's a 5-year age gap between me and my next closest sibling, which means, like, I could have not been born. It could have been my parents had 3 kids. In America, 3 kids or 4 kids, it's really a big financial difference. Like, you're talking about, like, a major, major financial difference. And I wouldn't be alive. Like, let's focus in on what that means. Like, able to unable to be alive. And even from unfortunately, if you come from a divorced family, but, like, the fact that you were able to be on this world, like, the fact that's a tremendous level of hakaras hatov to have. And even though your parents will annoy you, and they know they'll annoy you, and if you tell them they're annoying you, like, oh, I'm gonna stop, and they'll do the same thing or a different thing that'll annoy you. That's just what happens in the world. We just get annoyed. But we really should be makir tov and to understand that, like, they're doing it really, really, like, I mean, what I can say for myself as a parent, is totally, totally out of love. And already, like, when they're, like, 5, like, they don't want you walking them into God. Like, they're already embarrassed of you at that age. But, like, you'll still walk them in and give them the kiss before they come in, like, that your parents may have done when you were in 9th grade or today. But, oh, why are you giving me a kiss? Everyone's looking so embarrassing. But, like, they're doing it because that is their way of saying, like, I love you more than anything, and you are my world, and I would give up anything in the world, and the financial burden, the financial struggles that may come as a result, it's totally worth it, because I can't imagine a life without you guys.